2008. It arrived the day before her 25th birthday.
You order something?
Nate said, tossing the box onto the couch. Andy picked it up. It was light for its size, and she didn't recognize the New York return address on the printed UPS label. No. Nate wandered toward the kitchen, shuffling the remaining envelopes.
Birthday presents, maybe?
Yeah. Andy put the box on the coffee table. Maybe. As a rule, she didn't open gifts until the day they were meant to be opened. So after Nate had left for work the next morning, she settled on the couch with her laptop and reached for the box. She sliced through the packing tape with the tip of her pen and pulled the flaps back.
And froze.
Inside was a second box, a prim orange square tied with a black ribbon. Printed on the ribbon, and on the front of the box, was a logo she knew all too well. There was no card, no gift receipt, nothing to indicate the identity of the sender. Who on earth would be sending her Hermès? She had gotten plenty of freebies at Runway, true, but she'd never received anything packaged as a gift. Could it be from Nigel? They didn't text as frequently these days, and he'd never given her anything quite this extravagant before, but she supposed it was possible. Emily? Doubtful. Although she'd been quite a bit warmer after Andy had delivered the Paris loot. She untied the ribbon and lifted the lid. Atop the white tissue was a small card, cream-colored and embossed with the Hermès logo. In the center of the card, in black ink, was a handwritten letter A. Andy turned the card over. Nothing else was on it. She put it to the side and gently unfolded the tissue. "Oh, wow," she murmured. This was a mistake. Had to be, despite the fact that it was addressed to her, despite the A on the card. She lifted the scarf out and held it up. "Wow," she said again. It was oversized and light, concentric circles of black and white aged against an emerald green background. The edges looked as though they were hand-rolled. It must have cost a fortune. She looked around the room, feeling ridiculously as though she was being punked, and then wrapped the scarf around her neck. It felt like a dream against her skin. A mistake? Maybe, but she was going to enjoy it for the time being. She opened her phone, flipped it around to take a picture of herself wearing the scarf, and composed a text to Nigel. "Was this you?" The reply came in moments.
"Wish I could take credit. Forgot. Happy birthday."
And then, a moment later,
"You look good, Six."
Which made her smile. Her text to Emily went unanswered, and when she called the Hermès store in Manhattan, they told her that without a receipt, it was impossible to tell from which store the scarf had been purchased. She looked at the card again. It was a pretty unremarkable letter A. Even if Andy had been decent with handwriting, she doubted she would have been able to tell who had written it. She folded the scarf, put it back in the box, and took it to the closet. She slid it under her stack of t-shirts. If it was a mistake, someone would surely come looking for it. They never did. 2009.
"Wow," Trixie said. "You look horrible. It's a good thing I stayed over."
Andy stumbled toward the kitchen. "Thanks," she mumbled, almost dropping the mug in her hurry to get to the coffee.
"You look very cliché TV hangover," Trixie added, "with the sunglasses."
Andy grunted, then burned her tongue on the coffee. Trixie slid a piece of paper across the counter. "The girl from the bar gave me her number to give to you." The girl. The girl. Soft hands and a searching tongue.
"Oh my God," Andy said.
"Sit down before you fall down," Trixie advised. Andy did. "I think I maybe have had some realizations," she said.
Trixie smirked. "Thought you might."
She leaned and reached for a box on the sideboard.
"By the way, you got a package."
"Oh, probably my new running belt." Andy fumbled with a knife, trying in vain to get through the tape.
"Give me that before you lacerate something," Trixie said, reaching for the box and the knife.
She opened it, and her eyebrows shot up.
"This," she announced, sliding the box across the counter, "is not your running belt." Andy looked, and immediately remembered the mysterious Hermes scarf which had traveled with her from Boston to Cincinnati. Gloves. Black leather gloves, with Gucci's double G's in gold at the wrists.
"Jesus," Trixie said, smoothing a finger across the back of one. "Who are they from? Not your parents?"
Andy lifted the gloves from their tissue nest. "No," she said slowly.
"Oh, look, here."
Trixie reached for the tiny envelope and opened it, pulled out a Gucci inscribed card. Same letter A, nothing else.
"Are you kidding me?" Trixie said, putting the card back into the envelope. "Do you have a secret admirer?"
Andy pulled the left glove on, then the right. They fit perfectly, of course. 2010. Emily. It had to be Emily. She didn't have any other friends from her brief stint at Runway, and Emily had never responded to those particular messages the past 2 years.
"You've moved twice," Trixie said, sliding into the black taffeta Burberry trench coat that was in this year's mystery box. "I think at this point it's stalking."
"This is the only contact they make," Andy pointed out, turning the little Burberry card with its now familiar letter A over and over in her hands. "I hardly think that counts."
"I wasn't suggesting you do anything about it."
Trixie cinched the belt and turned to admire herself in Andy's closet mirror.
"Happy birthday," she added.
2011. Trixie wasn't home when the boots came, which was probably good, because although she wore a full size larger than Andy, she would have tried to swipe them. The apartment in Queens, so much smaller than the one they'd shared in Cincinnati, had quickly become crowded with their shared belongings. Andy had given away a lot of her wardrobe. Not, however, the mystery gifts. Same letter A. The return address was still the UPS store in Lower Manhattan. They were Louboutins. Ankle height, 2-inch heels, black leather like butter. Andy looked them up online. They were over $1,000.
"You must have a name," Andy said for the third time.
The woman behind the desk sighed.
"Ma'am," she said, "for one thing, we track numbers, not names. For another..."
I know, Andy said. She'd gotten the same response last year. UPS wouldn't give her a name, even if they had it. She put the Louboutins on her closet shelf next to the gloves and the scarf. Maybe, when she found out who the sender was, she would finally wear them.
2012. The birthday box for her 29th year was a cream-colored Givenchy turtleneck and the softest cashmere she'd ever felt. Putting it on was like being embraced by a cloud or something. She turned in front of the mirror, smoothed the impossibly soft fabric over her stomach and hips, and allowed herself to think the thought she'd been forcing down for the past 4 years. Maybe it's Miranda.
2013. A month before her 30th birthday, Andy had an idea. Whoever was sending these gifts, not Miranda, certainly not Miranda, there was absolutely no way it was Miranda, was keeping tabs on her somehow. They'd gotten their hands on every address she'd had. She didn't have any social media accounts except for a LinkedIn, so that was what they must be using. She'd been thinking of doing it anyway, had been contemplating it for at least 4 months. Trixie, whose hair changed color basically quarterly, was quite possibly more excited about it than Andy herself.
"Do it," she said, looking at Stella in the mirror.
Stella sliced at the air twice with her scissors, grinned, and neatly hacked off Andy's ponytail. She changed her profile picture that night. Head turned slightly to the side, so her newly shorn head was clearly visible. She wore the turtleneck. The box arrived on the 12th, 3 days before her birthday. Trixie came crashing through the apartment door with both arms wrapped around it.
"It's really big this year," she squealed.
Andy realized that her heart was hammering, that she'd started to sweat.
Every piece she'd been sent over the past 5 years had fit flawlessly, had perfectly accented some aspect of Andy's appearance. The scarf had brought out her eyes. The gloves made her arms look as graceful as a ballerina's. The boots looked incredible with everything she owned, and the sweater turned her into some kind of gleaming winter princess. There was only one person Andy had ever encountered who made such impeccable clothing choices.
"Open it," Trixie ordered, thrusting the box at Andy.
Andy took it with hands that felt like lead. "You know I don't open gifts until..."
"Come on," Trixie wheedled. "Make an exception, please."
Andy shook her head.
"Not this year, Trix."
"You suck, Sax," Trixie groaned.
Andy took the box into her room and put it against the wall, then lay down on her bed and stared at the ceiling. It was possible the mystery sender hadn't seen her profile picture. It was possible they didn't know she'd lopped her hair into a pixie cut. It was possible, sure. But somehow she doubted that was the case. It couldn't be Miranda. Not after she'd walked off the job. Surely not. Surely. That last day in the car, though. She'd slid in next to Miranda, arms full of itineraries and guest lists, and Miranda had looked at her. And there had been something. That look on Miranda's face, there and gone in a flash, so quick that Andy thought she'd imagined it. But then Miranda had done the thing, and Andy knew it was real. It wasn't anything, or wouldn't have been anything, had Andy not seen her expression the moment before. Miranda had reached up, and before Andy could move, could react, Miranda was touching her face. 1 second. Maybe two. The pad of Miranda's finger pressed to the corner of her eye, wiping a stray smear of eyeliner, maybe, or an eyelash. A whiff of her perfume. Slight flecks of the tendons of Miranda's inner wrist in her peripheral vision. "There," Miranda said quietly, and she looked away. But Andy saw it. That same raw expression. Gone in a moment as Miranda started rattling off Andy's task list for the afternoon. But Andy had been so shaken by the thing with Nigel, by Miranda's words not 5 minutes later, that the additive effect was overwhelming, unmanageable. She wasn't like Miranda. She couldn't be, and not just because of what she'd done at the banquet. Miranda, pale and barefaced in the hotel room, talking about her divorce. Miranda looking at Andy like she saw something in her, like she wanted something. Miranda's touch burning her skin. She hadn't been able to see it then. She hadn't realized why she'd panicked until much, much later. She rolled over. The scarf was folded on her nightstand. She no longer kept it in its box in the closet. She reached for it and shook it over herself, crossed her hands over her chest, stroking the silky fabric, and thought of Miranda.
"That box is killing me," Trixie said 2 days later.
Andy didn't look up from the submission she was reviewing. "Imagine what it would feel like if it was addressed to you," she said. Trixie dropped onto the couch next to her.
"You're mean."
"I know." Andy saved her work and closed the laptop.
"I can't believe you're going to make me wait until tomorrow."
Andy bit her lip, glanced toward her bedroom.
"You know what?" she said at last.
"I'm not. Let's open it."
Trixie let out a whoop and was off the couch and back so fast it made Andy's head spin. She dropped the enormous box into Andy's lap.
"Yay! Give me..."
Andy reached for her house keys, which she'd tossed onto the coffee table. She poked at the tape with a key and opened the box.
"What is it? What is it? What is it?"
Trixie bounced while she chanted, her cheeks pink with excitement.
"It's..."
Andy's breath called.
"Prada."
Trixie's eyes went wide.
"Shut up."
Andy lifted the Prada box out and opened it.
"Oh, shit," Trixie said.
It was a black cocktail dress. When Andy put it on, the bateau neckline lengthened her neck, made her collarbones look delicate and graceful. She stared at her reflection.
"That is,"
Trixie said quietly, when Andy came back out into the living room, "the perfect dress for your haircut."
She didn't take the dress off for a long time after that. Trixie went to bed at 9:30, but Andy stayed in the living room, nursing a glass of wine and reading tabloid articles about Miranda online. She didn't know exactly what she was trying to find. Some paparazzi photo of Miranda at the Prada store, maybe, buying a black cocktail dress? An unidentified source close to Miranda relating her spending habits? Sure. At 11, she finally gave up and closed the laptop. Went into her room. Gazed at herself in the mirror. She imagined Miranda's hands moving over MS scarves, the silk slipping between her fingers. Imagined her pressing the end of a pen to her lower lip, thinking of what to write on that first card and finally deciding on a single letter A. Miranda thinking about her. Thinking about her every year, even after all this time. She locked her bedroom door, reached for the scarf and wrapped it around her neck, sank down on the bed. Silk at her throat, the gentle scrape of wool at her shoulders, her thighs. She pushed the skirt up and out of the way. She closed her eyes, remembered Miranda's blue eyes, the way she'd looked at Andy that last day in the car. Expectant, wanting. Miranda's fingertips on her skin, the only time she'd ever intentionally touched Andy. It was enough. Andy came so hard that her vision went black for a moment. She had to pry her teeth off of her lower lip and her fingers off of the Hermes scarf. 3 days later, Andy slipped the very first card, the Hermes one, into an envelope, sealed it, and addressed it to Miranda. She dropped it into the mailbox before she could change her mind. 2014. Andy left early every day the week of her birthday, specifically to make sure she would be able to pick up the birthday box from the doorman before Trixie saw it. If Miranda was the mystery sender, then this year's gift would be her response to Andy. She would know, now, that Andy knew it was her. So Andy very much wanted to open this one in private. It arrived on March 13th. Andy locked her bedroom door, sat on her bed, and stared at it. It was small this year, about the size of the scarf box, innocuous, there on her old quilt, and yet Andy felt as though she was sharing the room with a bomb. Whatever was in there would indicate whether or not Miranda was happy to have been found out. Either way, it meant that the next move was Andy's. She cut through the packing tape with shaking hands. Givenchy, like the turtleneck. Her heart was beating so hard she thought it might actually dance right out of her chest. When she lifted the lid off the inner box, she was hit in the face with a puff of air. A puff of air that was scented, unmistakably, with Miranda's perfume. Oh, she breathed, suddenly lightheaded. Miranda only wore one scent. TMZ claimed that Helen Mirren had given her a bottle of Clive Christian No. 1 in 2005, and she'd worn it every day since. Andy had breathed its lovely floral aroma in the elevator after Miranda stepped out, in the back of the town car, caught in every purse and coat that Miranda had flung onto her desk. She would know it anywhere. For a moment, she was back in Paris, scalding touch by her right eye, Miranda's gaze wanting. She was clutching both hands to her stomach. With effort, she pulled them away and reached for the box, folded the tissue back. It could barely be called a camisole. Black silk in crepe de chine, impossibly delicate, spaghetti straps adorned with finely made lace. It was a breath away from lingerie. Andy felt as though all of the air had been forcibly removed from her lungs. And the card. Not the A this time, no. Now Andy could identify the handwriting. Black script and smaller letters than the previous years. Andrea. End of chapter 1.